This is a forum, and if you haven't been at a forum here at Holden, I'll just give you a little of the lay of the land, how it's understood here. It's just a chance to have some discussion back and forth on an issue that might have some interest beyond just a few people. Tonight it's about parenting and single parenting and surrogate parenting and grandparenting and whatever else. The way it works is that anybody just can comment and make a suggestion, a question, or a proposition. Whatever, you encourage that if you have differing points of view. We do encourage that you speak for yourself rather than saying, this is the way it is forevermore. If you say, I believe this is the way it is, the next person has a chance to say, well, I believe differently without trying first to knock down what you had said. So that'll give a chance for the dialogue to go back and forth. We encourage you to do that. My role will simply be to try and keep it going and keep it focused, avoid some domination by one person or the other if we have to. And I'll work I don't always succeed at this, I'll work very hard at domesticating my responses so that I just remain a moderator. And if I can't, I'll probably have to get somebody else to do the moderation, but I'll try to be moderator for tonight. The reason for parenting is that so many people are touched by it, of course. You either have been parented or are parenting, or both. And people have points of view, and some folks say that parenting ain't what it used to be, or parenting is more than it ever used to be. One of the real new things that a lot of people are talking about is the growth of single parenting and what that means, either by reason of death or divorce, or whatever, people being away from one another. At our university, we've been talking about, what do they call it, marriages where the husband lives in one city and the wife in the other city, and they get together on weekends and all that kind of business. There's lots more of that in some circles. So we invite you, and from your perspective, either as someone who has been parented or someone who is single parenting or grandparenting, we invite you to come.
Well, Mary, just to get the ball rolling, I don't have a specific comment other than say that we have four kids. One is 20, one is 18, one is 6, and one is 3. And when the two older ones were little, we were in school. And now we're out of school, have been for many years. And it's much easier to be a parent when you're out of school and the pressures are off and you have some income than before. And we're enjoying it immensely.
Thank you. Any response to that?
And that wasn't definitely the way we had it planned out years and years ago. It just sort of happened.
Well, I've been a parent for 8 months. And I'm 32. And I think through growing up and stuff, I think I'm a pretty mature person. And done a lot of things that kind of got a lot of stuff out of my system. And I look around at, well, back in my home parish, there's a couple getting married next month. He's 17 and she's 19. And I just shudder. You know, they're saying, have a kid young and grow up with your children, you know. If that's their case, and I know there's a lot of people, I just don't see how in the world to make it. I'm surprised that people make it through parenting, because parenting, for me, I knew it was a big responsibility, but I didn't quite realize how big and how much time it's going to take. And yeah, having to go to school and not having the money coming in, and wow. It's kind of tough. I'm sure it is.
Well, if you wait till you can afford them, you don't have them. Right. And I have two older boys, and I'm not married, they're quite a bit younger. And I've been a single person for a long time. And I've overcome the obstacles. I've had the same people take care of my younger, which I was very fortunate.
Speak up a little.
Okay. Well, I'm parenting and grandparenting all at the same time. And it's difficult. I mean, you have a lot of, well, it's interesting. It keeps you on your toes.
That's interesting.
I remember writing a letter to my oldest son when he was in college.
college, and among other things I said, in effect, I was, well, maybe surprised, but grateful at how well all of my six children turned out to be, considering as a parent I was an amateur. But, you know, we go into professions, train, work as an apprentice, or we go to college, to university. We go into marriage, we become parents without any of the formal training that we have. And so the marriage works, or...
You can ask one another questions if you feel like it. And if the person doesn't want to answer, then you just say,
What did you sum right back?
Oh, well, let's see, I don't recall. I'll have to think on that. If I think of it, I'll let you know.
We're in the process of becoming grandparents for the first time, and we want to know if there's anything we should be warned about.
We got some advice?
We don't get training in that either, you know.
Amateur grandparents.
I have a comment on that, because I have an older sister who just recently had children. I hear my parents' comments about the children, and then hers, and my parents have a tendency always want to help, you know, help. And my sister and her husband don't want to say, you know, mind your own business or whatever. It's like right when the baby's born, they want to have time alone with their babies to them, to be parents. And I could see how hard it would be for grandparents to stay away, but at the same time, you have to be really on
that. Yeah, it's good to be alert on that.
Anyone else got advice? We hear we have some brand.
Well, on grandparenting, I mentioned I have six children, and so I changed my share of diapers and had some other pleasant duties and tasks. And I've got five grandchildren and another one on the way, and I've laid down some ground rules. I'm not changing any diapers, and I'm just going to have fun with my grandkids. I think when my family was growing up, we were establishing an orchard. We had a big one, lots of work, and I did not have the time or the money to do some of the things with my kids that I would like to have done, and I had regrets in that direction. But now with the grandchildren, I hope to be able to do some of the things with them, have fun, have experiences with them that I did not with my own children. But those are the ground rules that I laid down. No diaper changing. My oldest grandchild is 9 years old, and I fell for that.
Which means no babysitting then.
Well, to a short, you know, short when they're small.
Take care of them when they're not crying or what?
Yeah. Anyone else have suggestions for our new grandparents?
I just want to say that when our children were growing up, you were not always close to their grandparents. And I agree. I think grandparents should have the privilege of just, I don't like to even use the word spoiling. I don't think you can give too much loving attention. And I think as soon as grandparents are put in the position where they are babysitters, they have to, they really have to enforce rules. And it's sort of neat for children to have some special people who give them that kind of unconditional love. Always been grateful for that. And when our parents weren't around, which was most of the time, we adopted. The kids picked grandparents, sort of within our congregation or community. And probably one of the most beautiful relationships that I've ever seen was with our one child and a 93-year-old retired pastor who lived across the way with his daughter. And all of his children or grandchildren were grown up, and there really wasn't much of anyone to give him a lot of affection. So this little one of ours, I'd take over every morning, and he'd sit on Grandpa's lap, and Grandpa would sing German songs to him, and our little one would kiss him around the neck, and all of the two of them just gave each other something that was very, very important. And I was very grateful for that.
There's surrogate grandparents, too.
Mm-hmm. Our one daughter now is... has an adopted grandmother she's close to Sanova, and in in Northfield. They have a program where they adopt grandparents in a nursing home. So she spends every Thursday with her adopted grandmother, and they really got a kind of neat thing going there, too.
Please. I was going to, for the grandparent here,
uh-huh.
go along with what you also said, be a single parent and not living close to my parents, but every once in a while, especially summertime, and they will take my children for a while, give me a break. And people comment, oh, I suppose they really spoil them. And I have to say, no, they don't. They try and be consistent with what I do. And yet at the same time, I really appreciate when they use discipline when they feel it's necessary and all. I make the children respect that, and I respect that. And that's important.
Thank you. I don't want to lay anything on you, but I am curious if you've got any more to say about single parenting and some of the pleasures and difficulties of that.
Well, I was sitting in on your 7 o'clock session, and you said one of the nicest things you can do to your children is let them see the relationship with your husband and wife. And of course, that's what you don't have, so you have to find other ways, I guess. Enough confidence in yourself that you're doing a good job. But the hardest thing I find is try not to take out my frustrations on my children because I'm with them 24 hours a day. So you have to look for other ways to do that, too. You need some adult in it, so I guess you look for some other adult that you can establish communication with. But the problem is that they're not there at the time. So your people that are with you at the time are your children, and that's a difficult thing. Because I haven't thought about the joy. I certainly appreciate and enjoy my children. But it's hard.
Thank you for sharing. What else?
Some children do things at Grandma and Grandpa's house that they can't get away with at their old home. What do the grandparents do?
Lay the law down. Tell them you don't do that at Grandma's house.
As a grandchild, I find I can take things from my grandmother that I can't take from my parents. Things that I still can't take from my parents at this age. I can respect what my grandma says and take advice from her and think it's just great, and my parents could give them the same advice and I wouldn't take it.
You've got a special opportunity, it looks like.
That was pretty much.
Right.
Or the grandmother served as kind of a person you could go to when you couldn't deal with the parents, an issue that was embarrassing or somehow didn't fit their expectations on you. Granny was a safe one to go to, and she sort of provided the buffer, which finally got back to the parents. So it was really important.
Someone else? Are there any bad parents left? I don't know what bad means.
I didn't hear the question.
Are there any bad parents left? I don't know what bad means. I'm trying to know that word.
Or was a bad parent to you if your children didn't turn out right?
No.
I think a bad parent would be one places too many expectations on the child to fulfill whatever need might exist in the family or in one personality.
Anyone else? I'm back to Art.
I'm not sure I would agree with that. I think as long as you're not too unrealistic, the number of expectations if the child has things to go for, that's fine. If you place too many of your expectations, what you didn't do in your life, if you watch this child,
I think that's what
you're saying. For, that's bad.
That's what I thought you were saying.
That plus, getting back to your earlier session on what can you give your children, the best thing is your relationship with your wife. And then it follows that if you're trying to get the fulfillment in your relationship out of your child instead of out of each other,
yeah.
I think that's an unreal expectation to put on the child.
To let it be a parent-child relationship in life.
I want to say something about disparate parents, because I think all our five children have had some people who've been very special to them outside of us, who have been able, that they've been able to go to and they've been able to talk to. And some of that happened here at Old Millage. One couple in our congregation who worked with the youth group were just tremendous. They were key people at a time in the kid's life, and they just wanted to go and talk to somebody. And I guess what I want to say about that is that I would hope we can be in that, act out in that position for somebody else's children. I don't think you ever exactly pay back. You just keep doing for someone else what maybe you can't do as well for your own. And I don't mean that total parenting. I mean some sort of very special. I just wondered how it is here in the village. When people are here all winter, I would guess that there would be some of that going on.
That's the humor that.
Unfortunately, they're both half-wits, you know.
I mean, could you? Is it just from being around you two? Is that?
That was a connection I gave myself earlier. I'm the moderator. What do you want to say, Jimmy?
I don't know. I have to think about that. How about giving me an example that I can respond to?
Well, I can't see who's asking the question. Right. They're just fun to be around and give a lot to others.
I'm going to think about it. I don't know of any one kind of special thing.
Well-adjusted.
Probably one of the things that I feel most happy about with our children is that they're scattered all over the country, and they really like each other and stay in touch with one another. And that didn't answer your question at all, but that to me is a real source of joy.
Mm-hmm. Anyone else? Thanks for the compliment. I mean, I wasn't ignoring that. I appreciate it. Yes, please. Art?
To get back to the idea of surrogate parents, I teach high school students and I also coach.
Mm.
I'm a chess coach about it. And I've noticed over the years, both as a teacher and then also as a coach, those are rather pivotal years for people as they grow up. And I found myself more than just many times, someone that kids would come and talk to for a time in their life. Sometimes they had no one to talk to at home, or there was no one to talk to them at home. And I found, and I've worked a little bit at it, that it's not quite a spontaneous thing always. You just make yourself available, and if they say seriously, or they just walk in and start talking, you sit down, and, or say, look, let's go outside here in the hall, let's go in the English office, let's, I want you up here in the front seat while I drive back from the meet. And they just talk. And sometimes all you keep doing is making encouraging noises, and they talk to you and you listen, you might ask a question. Or if they ask advice, or if they ask what to do, you don't say, well, here's what you do. You say, here are three things you might want to do. And maybe help them analyze it out. That's really what it takes. And I think that's being a starter. These are the kids that come back and haunt you as you keep teaching. Year after year, they'll return and get tired of them.
Oh, boy, I think high school teachers have fabulous opportunities like that. I really do.
Part of the job.
Yeah, right. I'm not sure it's always, done well and all that. I get into a whole other subject about high schools in America, but I think that's a real opportunity. Somebody else? Got a response to that? Or
I would say one compliment to grandparents is I teach kindergarten, and at the beginning of the year when discipline is a little more rigid, I'm called mommy 9/10 of the time. And in the spring, when you can start having more fun with them, they start to call me grandma.
Interesting.
In inner city Chicago, high school coaches are considered the key people in reaching kids.
Is it easier to be a parent today when everybody has a TV set than it was years ago when they didn't have?
Depends whether you use it or not.
What?
Depends whether you use it or not.
Well, I think it's used if there's children in the family. I think it's.
Anybody got some response to that? A guess? A hope?
Sesame Street is excellent. I like it too. I can understand it. Actually, no, Sesame Street and programs of that caliber are excellent.
I've heard the opposite.
Yeah.
Sesame Street is, according to some teachers, doesn't give children the attention span that they need to have.
I think it depends on the age group that you're working with. You know, like little two-year-olds, they just don't have a long time span. And so I think that Sesame Street is good for a child that age. But at five or six, when they need to develop a longer time span, attention span, then I think it loses its value. But I think it does have, you know, really important value for the very small child.
I've also heard about not particularly Sesame Street, but all these programs, that one tendency they might have and one negative thing they might have is kind of a sassy attitude or a type of humor that isn't the best type of humor, and a type of expression where they get six people on stage in front of this camera yelling at each other and, you know, being funny in ways that aren't really funny, and that in order to keep it interesting they use that kind of expression, but it's not a good expression for kids to pick up on. I don't know.
I was reading the other day a report on, so it was a synopsis of research presently going on in regard to television and its effects, when there's hundreds and hundreds of research teams and universities doing all this research. And the summation of the article said that we have no idea yet, after only 30 years of television, we have no idea what it's doing. But the early indications are just frightening for all sorts of things, for emotional control and response, for ability to relate to other people, for ability to sit for a long period of time, reading abilities, lots and lots of implications. But it's too early yet to know. But the television question in parenting may be very, very closely tied. Our family's been here for 2 years now, and we've been away from the television. And as soon as my sons Eric and Matthew go out to town, they're just dying. They can hardly wait to get that thing out. But while they're here, they're fine. And they read books, they read a book a day, just fast as they can. And it's so exciting. And I know one of the great problems we're going to have, one of the big decisions we have coming up for us when we leave here, is what that thing's going to do to our family. Because when they go out, it's just, oh boy, addiction. And here it's just so nice to see them read. You know, to become friends with Laura Ingalls Wilder and everybody else out of the summer, and not be watching all this, whatever it is.
I teach in a school where, in a country where there is no TV, and it's amazing to see the amount of ability the children have to create their own entertainment, how they can read for hours on end, listen to you read and become totally wrapped up in it. And then I'm taught in the United States, and the comparison is kind of interesting.
I don't want this to go into necessarily a discussion on TV, but I could see a problem when our two older kids were in junior high school with the television, and so just refused to let him watch it on school nights. and they squawked to bloody murder for a couple, three nights, but they survived, and I think their schoolwork was probably better for it. Maybe not.
Can I break out of the moderator role just to share an experience? At the university that I teach at, we do a thing called Theology for Lunch on Wednesdays. We try to have somebody from the university speak sometime and somebody outside next time. And one of the best we had, the only person we invited back the next week, because we always have the schedule worked out a number of weeks in advance, was a fellow by the name of David White, who is in cinematography and was a professional commercial. He wrote commercials and produced them for television. And what he did is bring a Kentucky Fried Chicken commercial to the session and then showed it to us and asked us what it was about. We all thought we knew, you know, but we thought it was about chicken, but it was about grandmothers. And then he showed us by stop framing it how once we had committed ourselves to watch the commercial, that we had given up our rights as individual and we were forced to look in every place that they wanted us to look every moment. And he showed us how they did that. It was how cleverly it was done. His reaction wasn't bad, that television was bad because they spent time or because there were commercials that got you to buy things you didn't need or something like that. But he says the essential message, since it is a bottom line money-making industry, that's what television is all about. It's only about money. It is not about anything else, his contention was, that it was forced to show people, convince people, subliminally or any way it could, that only what you could touch or taste or feel is real. And an idea, or as he said to us, the faith is impossible. Only the other is real. So it wouldn't be so much how it gets in the way of studying from his point of view, although that would be important, but what it has done for all the years in giving a whole world view, if that is true. And it was his contention, he couldn't, you know, prove it yet. The evidence maybe isn't in. So the things that are happening may be of that root nature, that the faith, or faith, is not possible to people who have been trained to think that only, and very effectively trained to think, that only what you can touch, taste, and feel. I wonder if that's true.
I was gonna say, I think it's interesting that the first we talk about parenting, and then we talk about surrogate parents. Mm-hmm. Now we're talking about the TV promises of surrogate parents. And it occurs to me that, that what we've done is we've become such individual units, and then we've become so individual that we don't even want to relate to our own children. That maybe we ought to see if there are ways in our society where we can get back, if possible, to some kind of extended family situation where everyone shares in the task of raising children and relating to children, and instead of becoming more and more individual, we become more and more community. Maybe it's impossible. Mm-hmm.
Got a response to that?
I think that, of course, television has a destructive influence on communication in the family, and beyond that, then, going a little farther, I've, as a pastor, tried to observe where parents seem to be doing a good job and of maintaining and developing communication with the children, where there is this kind of give and take within the family. And in my looking at a number of different families where there seems to be a good job done, it seems that I see persons who are able to talk a lot. Mother, for example, who is continually talking, exposing herself, maybe being vulnerable, being totally open. Maybe a lot of the things that are said are just some nonsense, and I would be bored listening to it, but yet that continual talking seems to develop in the kids a confidence in her or him, and they seem to be able to then open themselves up
because they know everything almost about their mother or about their dad because they are continually talking. And so I see those kids also talking with their parents. And it's just as fantastic sometimes when I observe this. And I discover in myself that I just can't talk about little things constantly. And I wish I had that gift. And the same thing happened as far as my father was concerned. He couldn't talk about little things either. And so I thought of him as a very stern sort of a person. And yet he was the most gentle person you could ever imagine. He never in his whole life struck us in any way. And yet I thought of him as such a stern person just because he couldn't become vulnerable and open himself up and talk about little things all the time. And I think I find that my children think of me in that way too, because as a stern sort of person, now that they've gotten older and they've grown up, they come back and say how scared they were of me. And I just, it's hard for me to believe that, because I don't think that I'm that sort of person. And yet, because I am not a small talk person with the kids, I can't think of little subjects to be talking about all the time. Some people have that gift. But I do think that maybe younger couples ought to start practicing that. Talk about all kinds of nonsensical little things, even becoming vulnerable and laughed at or whatever. If they're ready to do that, I think the kids will talk later on in their lives. You know. That sounds maybe very superficial, but...
No, I think it's very insightful. I think part of it is just looking at the world through the eyes of a child, which as an adult is very difficult to do. But I think if you try to do that, and see the world through the eyes of a child, you know, there are all those little things that they're seeing that are important things to them.
Good.
I was just going to ask for more comment from other people on what Ober had just said. That was great. That was...
Okay, go ahead. I have to comment because I work with Ober and because I know his daughter, and I really think that I know his youngest daughter, and she is one of the most on-the-ball people that I know. And I think probably part of the reason is because both of her parents are on-the-ball people, and they, Ella is one of the kingpins at a big hospital, and Ober is one of the kingpins at a big church, and they work hard, and they do. I feel like Diane has such a sense of responsibility that any of the, if you feel like you've missed the boat on some of these more superficial things, I think I'm some of the more important things you have. If I was 16, I'd buy Diane a little ivory color. don't tell Linda.
I'm looking at what Ober said, and I'm thinking about when I grew up, my father was often away during the week and came home and put us all back in order. I love my mother had not managed to get up with many of the things again. And it occurred to me when he said the business about talking that I never really had a chance to talk with my father or be with me until I went away to college. And then I was phoned home to that. So. And during one period in college, and I decided to change majors from what he had sort of pushed me towards into what I wanted to do. Then we often had rather ferocious arguments. I used to go out and run in the park up and down the hills for an hour. I would do phone calls just to get the food out. And that did help have to get the food out in those conversations, because even though we were opposed, we then got to know each other's minds and how they worked, which did not happen when I was at home. When I was helping raise my own children, especially my son, who was younger than my daughter, I spent a great deal of time with him, and often just watching Cub games when he crawled around, literally crawling in the living room, watching him, like taking him to walk and things like that. And he was too early to tell us, but he's more verbal than I'm understanding. I'm going to try and keep that sort of talent going. Because I think that that is one of the keys. Just be there, be rattled on, what's important is to pick up, and more what we say is not important is to stop. But the fact that the communication is there, it's looking for 23 times not at all.
About this TV, I thought TV was just a TV. I don't think that's going to be the violence, so I could keep my boy at home. And I think they learned a lot from the TV, and the fact that and as far as the mental board, I like to do what to play out, and I work for, I work because there's problems where I work. But as far as doing a single task, it's very difficult. Because you're only a single people. And church doesn't take a single person.
What about the very old fashioned idea of old grandparents living in a home?
What Carol was getting at, wasn't it?
Taking care of other people's children. And there are different things with training on it, for example, that you might, I mean, I think there's an adjustment there that's actually really, they have a whole bunch of people involvement with our children. I say that as a teacher, not as a parent, but even a teacher, so, you know, how do you get a person to criticize my class, my class? But come out of it, teaching the music, we need to involve a whole bunch of people so that children have a chance to relate to a number of adults. And there's some kind of buffers all over the place and places to relate to share the experience. And get ideas about what's proper behavior, talk out ideas and things. And I don't know whether that's just a matter of having grandparents, but
my father lived with us for 10 years. He was 89, but he's 91. And we had two teenagers. And I think it was a marvelous influence on us. I think they've always learned gentleness, kindness, thoughtfulness. They're very thoughtful, even many years later now, to the older people.
And then you graduated from Berkeley Public Services in South Dakota, sent out a month ago to the pastors in several editions. He had a little note in there that they had spent at the home office in Sioux Falls, the council there spent a whole day making two things in the future, how they might direct their activities there. And one of the topics they took up was the economic situation being what it is. They're anticipating the need more young couples moving in with one or the other of the parents because we can't find home, we can't afford it, and how this might, with two families now living in the same house, will change and the needs there. The other thing, when I read that, I thought of the young pastor in Minnesota, the first three marriage counseling incidences that I had, were all three of them involved the home place and the church. Either mom and dad were still not in the house and son and daughter-in-law moved on the place, or son and daughter-in-law moved into the house and mom and dad moved in the trailer. And I always counsel couples living there, you know, don't move in with your in-law. Because, and a lot of people that I have met have said the same thing, they have to for trouble. But, you know, I can also see, although I've never lived in a home with my grandparents, I can also see that would really have been community needs. I mean, I think there's a lot of, it looks to me like there are a lot of tension that could come with two households in the same house. but also maybe some of the values to be gained from that outweigh the cost. I don't know.
That, again, I would hope they would be mutual, that the adults, the grandparents, would change as much as the children are, and they would learn from the children. We think that would be really true, huh? I hope. Yeah.
I'd like to know from the people who live in the state of Washington or anywhere that I get, what should I expect when we leave here for my children as far as drug use is concerned? What will the school teach my children? And will they help our family as far as accurate drug information, or will they not? And if not the school, to whom should T&I look in the community for some assistance in accurately educating our two boys on what they will find in the playground?
Extreme.
I was with Virginia Grand Prince for about 9 months, and this is in Wisconsin. And we had 8 kids at one time, and all of them were probably the drunk. So I went, at one time I went to the school and I said, is there any way you can help us? And they told me, no, this is just one school, or, but they said there's nothing we can do about it. You know, that they were more or less saying that it was our responsibility or the parents' responsibility. I mean, sure, they have education and that kind of stuff, but they told me that there was nothing they could do, that it was our responsibility.
Did the state of Wisconsin provide educational material on the subject, or the state of Washington or Minnesota? Or?
Yeah.
Kids don't need education. He says about parents, but too.
Yeah, I need to learn too.
I don't need
to
do it, but I think they do. I don't know.
Over here.
We know how to stay here.
Yeah.
I think that when you leave Holden, and specifically speaking about Washington State, if you've been in this environment, as I say, for 2 years, you just don't have any idea what you're headed towards. It is so all-pervasive and so far beyond what you're expecting going into that you should really prepare yourself before you get to it. The question you asked is a good one. It's not one that can be answered in just a few minutes. It's a multifaceted answer to just what the problem is. We worked for 6 or 7 years trying to get a drug program into the high school in our community and failed. They finally adapted a program which they copied from the Tacoma school district, and that was a program that had been copied from another school district, and it was just basically run out on forms and adapted as a part of the curriculum, but was never really utilized in any way. I guess to sum that whole thing up, you're probably, if your child were in a public school and had a drug problem, it is more likely than not the teachers wouldn't have any idea the child has a drug problem after it went on for a great length of time, even with some training which they will get for identifying it.
We got a couple of people right here. I think a lot depends upon the area that you go to. I live in the state of Washington, and I have children in grade school as well as just going into junior high school. And both of my kids, I would say, probably know more about drugs than I do, because of what they have gotten through the school. And I think in addition to that, I am no more concerned about drugs than I am about alcohol, or than I am about any of the other things that my kids are going to encounter that I as a parent, hopefully, am going to be able to work with and prepare them for, because they're going to face this regardless. And, you know, it's something we're going to have to deal with like we deal with anything else. And I don't know that, I'm sure a lot of it depends upon the school. We are not in an urban school. We are in a school district that is outside the city, and in a very fine one. But I think it all comes back to us as parents and our dealing with the children within the home is what we're going to have to do. And back over here, what do you want to know? Go ahead.
Yeah, I was just saying that,
no,
my husband
is
just
oh, okay.
And we do, and the philosophy in our school district is you cannot wait until the kids in junior high school or high school for education on drugs or smoking. That is something that has to start in kindergarten, and we are very fortunate
then in kindergarten, our children every year have 6 weeks of drugs and tobacco. And it's just an excellent program because if you went to junior high school, it's too late. Mm-hmm. And new parents know that this is going on in the schools and we can attend discussions with our children. And the educators, parents, if you choose to go, and you have a education along with our children. And the schools are helping us, but yet the responsibility is in the home, not put on the school.
A few more hands. Carol, hang on.
If anybody knows the kids around the drugs, the teachers know. At least somebody during the day will know. I taught in the Los Angeles City Schools for 17 years. It got so at the end of the 60s that I spent more time checking kids' pupils, checking out their speech, their walk, I mean, everything else, that I haven't had time to teach English. The fact of the matter is the teachers don't want to hear anything about that, or the parents don't want to hear anything about that, and the schools don't want that kind of information always being the primary thing that goes on. But teachers know about drugs. That's not the problem.
Art, where to go with your parents is a little hard depending on the cases. Because if you're going to a suburban study, it'll be tremendous by a peer pressure because the suburban school is going to have kids have more money to spend, and more drugs and or alcohol generally classified is going to be available. My own observation is that 5 years ago drugs were more prevalent, which is now I think it's alcohol. And alcohol is much more easily obtainable, and by the way, it's much more legal. Check your community health people, find out how good they are, find out the emergency numbers, right? See if they have any education. If you get lucky, go talk to the assistant principal in charge of this equipment at the junior high and the high school, if you want to find out something. Drugs in school is just about as resulting to really be taught as respect education.
I'm
going to
back up. I feel kind of, no response to that. I think it's really,
I just think that people took it as a truism.
I'm not a single, but I have a 16-year-old who's been widowed with a very small infant. And I also have another mom who's been widowed. And, I'm sorry to say that our church and all the churches in our area, not only the religious church, but all the other churches do not have a change office for us in the country, and they really feel like people walk with me. We're fighting that right now, last time we used it.
We got to think last week on it, here at a forum and others. There are folks who specialize there. I'm not saying it with answers, but there are folks who work on it. I don't want to, get off into that totally, but it raises a good issue.
It's terrible. It seems to get one way or the other.
Did you hear anybody else say that somebody else is
wrong? No.
Well, I think back to the extended family, and I'm not saying that the extended family might be a potential for, as I see it, including the individual parent, the single parent, in that activity. I mean, as Christians, and as working with our brothers and sisters in Christ and seeing these situations, and like you say, you just can't sit there. Well, you in your daily activities, you keep her around. And it's so easy for me to close my eyes, and I thank God that He's He is working at opening, trying to open my eyelids to the things that are going on around me. And that are so obvious once, oh boy, what's been going on, and I haven't done a thing about it, and I'm the person who could, And I don't know. Mm-hmm. Where are the efforts at work? like Marilyn saying, we're trying to get family. We don't seem to have the trouble with the singles, but the singles that we don't have trouble with are the young, college-age singles who don't have a problem really, in the sense that the older people who, like my mother, who is concerned about a home, a Christ-centered home for her family, and that was her concern, and I don't think she ever thought that it was addressed by other, quote, church people. The Christ-centeredness that happened in our extended family came through with my grandmother. When you mentioned grandmother, she was the Christ-centeredness in our family, because she was never, she was that special person that you could always trust, who always relied on the Lord, and never was complaining, was always helpful.
Any others?
Yeah. I'm taking that aspect of single parenting. And the congregation I'm a member of the congregation, I've been able to help my neighbor as a close group of people. And I didn't realize until the aspect of being a single parent came up in that context how close that congregation was and how much the body of believers could rally around someone. And I guess the answer is that the Christian leader, each congregation's chemistry is what's going to determine how it's studied in the congregation. It's not the religion per se, it's not the people per se, but it's a whole aura that we don't.
I let that comment slip by a while ago, partly because it's not the first time that I've heard it, and it won't be the last. And there is a certain amount of truth in it. And yet, if you're involved in that whole matter of trying to be of help at the church to the single, whether it's a widowed or a divorced a person, you discover that there are some almost insurmountable difficulties that we just can't seem to handle. Like, for example, we do have a group in our church called THEO, T-H-E-O. They help each other. This is for those who have lost a spouse, and they get together a number of times during the month to be of help to one another, talking over some of the feelings and hurts and things that they have. And then we decided to start a group for, trying to start a group for divorce and seeking to be of help to them. And then also trying to have singles groups, but invariably it turns out to be kind of a matchmaking thing, and the men oftentimes are not going to come to that, and so you have a few women who will come. And what, how, if any of these single persons could give us as pastors some clue as to what they would really want, and from experience, we'd sure be willing to help out, but none of them are willing to tell us what would be acceptable or satisfying to them. Another thing that a widowed person experiences is that they tend to be closed out of groups, and yet when I talk to married couples and ask them, now, have you closed this widowed person out? Why don't you invite her into your... We're inviting her constantly. Then I talk to her and she's got the feeling that she's being closed out, and because she's a fifth wheel or something. So there are some problems that whether it's psychological or whatever it is, we can't get our hands on as clergy to really deal with this problem.